Everyone, today is a very serious day.
She is over there consuming copious amounts of caffeine. Oh, I feel like this has been you've been slamming since about 5 this morning. Wait, no, hold on. They're not sponsoring us. I'm going to bleep that out. You've been sponsoring
insert name of energy drink here
since 5 this morning.
I've been up since 9:30 and I've had 4 cups of coffee and I just got this 20 ounce because this
I
is
have to
a
bleep
serious...
that one too.
Oh, sorry.
They're not paying us.
I have caffeine in my system because this is a serious day on Offbeat Tracks.
Very
I mean,
serious.
we've done a lot of episodes that I'm very
yeah.
Into.
We're up to 43. This is 43.
I'm going to put it to you this way: we've done some holiday episodes, and I'm always like, I hate this holiday. It sucks, but we do it anyway. But this is the true holiday.
Mm.
It's Eurovision week. And that is like the only religion I have.
Okay. So you see Eurovision as a holiday?
For me, it's like
yeah,
this.
All right. I feel that.
I wish I were in Europe for it because it's much better.
I feel that way about the Scripps National Spelling Bee when the adorable little kids get up and spell hard words. Yeah.
May is the best month on the planet. Yeah. And this year, with the way it falls, we get Eurovision week followed immediately by National Spelling Bee week.
Isn't it beautiful?
Like, I'm not going to see anyone for like 2 weeks because I'm going to be just losing it. But anyway, we're talking about Eurovision today.
We are. And I think actually now would be a good time to bring up because the spelling bee is something that is televised every year gracefully. And
now Eurovision for a long time was never televised in America because a lot of people don't know it or care. But it was finally for the first time last year televised in the U.S. The finals were on Logo TV.
Of course.
So
where else?
Yeah, it's the gay channel. And this is...
It's a very gay event.
It tends to sway gay, if yes. you will.
Sway gay, yes. it sways gay. It trends gay.
It's sway
like
gay.
It.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I actually just looked this morning. They finally announced that they're going to show it again this year, too. So
exciting.
The finals, it'll
so you
be,
can watch Eurovision live.
Yes, it'll be Saturday, the final, on the May 13th. At, I think, 3 p.m. Eastern. So adjust your time zone as needed.
There you go. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the history of this. I have to say, by the way, I want to thank you up front because Eurovision is sort of one of these like blackout areas of my music knowledge. It's just not something I've ever paid much attention to.
We don't have a lot of exposure.
Doing this research for this episode, I learned a lot and it's very interesting. So yeah, you want to debrief us on some Eurovision history?
Basically, Eurovision is called the Eurovision Song Contest officially, and it is a time when a bunch of countries of the world, some European, most European, some not, it's kind of hairy on that, but they come together, they all pick a song, they pick a singer, and they go, and it's like one big, it's not like American Idol in a way. It's different.
No, but
it's all
it is,
original songs.
Yeah, but it is a bunch of people like in an arena cheering on their favorite.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's been going on since 1956.
Yeah, they which blew my mind that it's that old.
Every single year. And whoo boy, if you want to like, if you ever want to like have some entertaining television, go on YouTube. They have full old like Eurovision song contests on there. My God. But it started in 1956. A guy named Marcel Bezanson, he's French, or he's not French, he's Swiss.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, look, we're in post-war Europe. Everyone tends to fight all the time. And we need to, like, foster European oneness and stop having all these dumb world wars. So he's like, I got an idea. Let's have a big old song contest and compete over songs. And it's all kind of based on Italy had something similar to this. And they still do, the Sanremo Festival. And it was kind of based on that.
But this has kind of been the official one since 1956.
Yes.
I gotcha.
Yes. So this is the big Europe one. I think like the first one had 7 countries and it wasn't even like Sweden wasn't even
How many countries participate in Eurovision now?
It depends on the year because like sometimes someone pulls out because they're cranky.
Right.
Russia, I'm looking at you this year.
But
we'll get to it.
I mean, any European country kind of plus Israel is
eligible,
right?
You have to be in the European Broadcasting Unit, your like main television station.
Okay.
So... Like U.S., like the U.S. is showing it, but they're not in the EBU. So, in order to, if America ever got in it, they'd have to join the European Broadcasting Unit. which
so do you want to talk about that now, because I know you have strong feelings about whether America should participate in Eurovision. So should we get this out of the way now before we actually talk about these songs?
Yeah, let me back it up a little bit, because like right now it's got 42 countries are in it this year.
Wow.
It was 43 until Russia got cranky.
Well, that's way more than I would have guessed.
Yeah, it's 42 this year. Not every country is very European. For example, you have Israel.
Right.
Turkey, which is Europe, depending on how you want to define it, but also not, depending on how you want to define it. There are like places like Azerbaijan, not really Europe.
Europe adjacent.
Georgia. Yeah, they're like Europe-ish. And also, as of 2015, Australia, which is...
Interesting.
Not Europe.
Yeah, but very heavily, I mean, populated by European immigrants.
In Australia, they are so campy.
Not totally off vision.
They are so campy and like... Eurovision is for them.
Yes.
I totally get that. They appreciate it. And they're pretty fucking serious about it, too. So they're a good addition. But, I mean, there was a lot of talk last year with the U.S. showing this on TV and the fact that they had an interval act during the voting of Justin Timberlake, your favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Is this like the setup for the U.S. to come into Eurovision? And everyone was like, who? I don't know. And I'm like, no, please don't. The U.S. would be bad in Eurovision. It would be the worst. It would be the worst. We have no business in it. Can you imagine if Donald Trump got a hold of, like, the Eurovision Song Contest and, like, maybe Italy didn't give us full points?
Okay, so full disclosure, Danielle just told me before this episode that she had strong opinions on America's participation, but she didn't tell me what her opinion was.
Yeah.
And I was really worried that she was going to be, like, super pro-America in Eurovision, and I'm very anti-America in Eurovision as well.
Yeah,
I think we should leave it to the Euros.
I feel like we have no business in any sort of European identity. We don't have that. We have to win everything or else we're pissed.
Right, and we take ourselves way too seriously.
Thank you.
We would not get the spirit of the Eurovision, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Russia's a lot of the same way.
You think?
Like, that's why Russia is like a bitch every single year. Like, they got really mad. They're like foreign minister.
I love how we just regularly just denigrate countries on this show.
Okay. Russia, like, I kind of love them
a little
bit.
It's like, okay, let me tell you about the British.
No, Russia is kind of cool and a little, like, I'm kind of
going to be a lot more of that this week, I feel like.
Oh my God, we are going to get to you, England. Russia is very dramatic. Everything is very, like, one time their foreign minister got involved. This year they've pulled out.
It's a song contest, okay? Okay, Russia, it's a fucking song contest. Like, chill.
No, it's not.
Have fun.
They once got caught buying votes.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just don't think that... I think we have one country like that, and we should just keep it to one. And the U.S.
Yes.
Also,
That's very fair.
The viewership last year on Logo for the song contest out of the entire country was 52,000.
Wow.
And I think I had it on two different TVs.
Yeah, so we... There you go. Further proof. We have no business. If we can't even get soccer off the ground here, Eurovision has no chance.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the contest itself and how this works. Because I thought Eurovision was just like one event. They prepare a song ahead of time. They all go and they vote at this one event. But there are like preliminary...
Yes. Every country has some sort of way of picking a song. A lot of them now have their own televised thing every year. Like Sweden has Melody Festivalen, which is basically mini Eurovision, where you have, like, juries that vote for songs, and you also have a televote.
So it's like the Olympic trials, but for Eurovision.
Kind of, yeah.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, a lot of countries have, like, England has one that is, they pick someone awful every single year. It's amazing. It's unbelievable how bad.
Oh, Lord.
But they know they're bad at it. I think they might do it on purpose at this point. Like, Portugal has one, Spain has one. They are, yeah, so, like, everyone has, like, an individual heat in, like, January or February.
Okay, so that's way early in the year.
Yeah, it has to be a song that was performed live in this year. So it can't be a song that was performed or released before.
So you mean it has to be a new song that debuts this year?
Yes, it has to be a new original song. So no one's coming in doing a cover of whatever cool song there was that everyone loves. Like,
gotcha.
It's got to be a brand new song. But also what you have now in the newer contest is they can release videos and there's social media.
Right.
And it's not like you're going into the Eurovision Song Contest completely just seeing new songs.
And ready to be blown away, right?
Yeah. It's like a whole different game.
So you've probably like already picked your favorite and you're kind of cheering.
Oh my God, I've got them ranked.
No, I mean, sorry. I mean, as the voter.
Exactly.
You've probably seen them all. You're ready to. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So they have like, do they have like a first round then where everybody, like all 42 countries gets to do something on TV and
there
present their song?
There are semifinals. So there will be a semifinal on Tuesday the 9th and a second semifinal on the 11th. And like they the first and the second don't have to do with each other. They split up the countries in the semifinals.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember which top one. I've never figured that out. But they, whatever the scores are, they just pick the top of those. And then, like, I want to say, like, 20 of them will perform on final night.
Okay.
There's a big five. Where they don't even have
to. So it starts with everybody, whittles down to about 20, and then whittles down to five.
Well, the five is the five, or there are five countries that don't even have to semifinal, no matter how shitty their pick is. Like the UK, that's how they get in every year, and their pick is, whew, they need to be semifinaled. let me find the big five in my notes here, because I always read it's the UK, Spain, which I don't know how Spain got it. I'm assuming it's a
money thing. Does this change every year? I'm sorry. Or are you saying
no,
there
the
are.
No, the big five every single year, no matter what. So
they always, it's just in the rules of the contest, these five always get to, mm-hmm.
And Turkey actually pulled out, this is as of like 2010, Turkey pulled out because they were like, that's not fair, which.
It does seem unfair.
Like, I fucking get it, but yeah. You know, we'll miss
gotcha.
You.
Gotcha, so it's the UK,
we'll miss you, Turkey.
UK, Spain, and who else? What are the other
UK,
three?
UK, Spain, Italy, where did I know I wrote this in here? UK, Spain, Italy.
I'm surprised Sweden is not one of them.
Right, they should fucking be.
Yeah, I mean, if there's
okay,
any.
Okay, France, Germany.
France, Germany, Italy, Spain, and the UK.
Spain, UK, and Italy. Yes. Okay. Yeah, and they're not even that great at Eurovision anymore. They're usually pretty. Yeah, they're usually pretty in the middle or at last, but they always get to be in there, which is really weird.
And something I saw in your notes that I thought was interesting. I did not know this before, but the winner of Eurovision gets to host the contest next time. So I did not know that.
Yeah. So. Like, for example, I'm planning to go back to Europe, and I'm like, well, I got to see who wins this.
Sure.
That will affect my trip.
Because you'll get to go next year. I got
you. Yeah, I'm only going if it's a country I'd care to go to. Like, this year, it's in the Ukraine.
Right. It's probably not the best place to be hanging out right now. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, more set up for Russia drama that we'll get to later.
Yes.
But, yeah, so, like, Jamala won last year with some shitter of a song. I'm sorry, it was bad. I don't know why people voted for it. Maybe other than to piss off Russia. And now it's in Kiev. So everyone's there right now doing rehearsals, been listening to all the podcasts and reading the news. I'm so excited.
Interesting. There have been a handful of really well-known acts who have participated in Eurovision, like really, really, really big names.
Mm-hmm.
Some of whom we're going to talk about, but some that we're not going to touch on when we play song clips here, but worth mentioning. Olivia Newton-John.
Yes.
Celine Dion, which I don't think is any big surprise, because I guess Canada can play for France.
You don't have to be you don't have to be a citizen of your country to participate for somebody. So a lot of times, especially those French-speaking countries, they grab
Canadians.
Elsewhere.
Okay, interesting. And Katrina and the Waves, which I think was super funny.
This was like way after they walked on Sunshine. Like this is like 1998.
To be honest,
they won.
Yeah, really?
Mm-hmm. It's an okay song. It was fine, but they totally won. And then they're only like, they weren't really popular anymore by any means. But they had like.
Not, did you say 1998?
Yeah, they had a decent following at the time. Like, you know, they were touring Europe and they were getting crowds and stuff, but they were like a, you know, not really a poppy band at that point. They get on Eurovision to try to get famous and they win. And then all of their fans were like, you sold out, you suck. And then they like broke up because no one wanted to see them anymore.
The fickle fan base of Katrina and the Waves.
I know.
And you know what's super interesting about that too is that they do have American members in that band. I think like she is British.
She's American.
You're right. She's the American. You're right. The band is British and she's American. You're right. I was thinking
it was
the other
way
around.
Was actually kind of a big deal at the time. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. The UK people were do we really want to send someone?
Technically,
like,
I guess that's the closest we have ever come to participating in the Eurovision contest.
There's actually one that's on this year for San Marino. It's an American is one of the people.
Nice.
Yeah. San Marino never makes it, but they're the most fun.
No, but stick it in there, San Marino. Yeah. keep doing what you do. So one of probably the most famous act has participated in Eurovision. And we Danielle kind of divided these. We are going to talk about some Eurovision songs historically.
Yes.
And Danielle's kind of divided these up into four categories, which I really like. So we're going to talk about some iconic Eurovision songs, some WTF Eurovision songs.
And that, like, I had to whittle that down because there are at least three every year where you're like, holy shit.
Political songs of any songs of political import, and then a handful of just our personal favorites. And then finally at the end, we're going to preview Eurovision 2017. So the first of these iconic songs would be another member of that list that we were just talking about of iconic artists who have performed on Eurovision. Of course, probably the most well-known of all time would be ABBA and their performance of Waterloo in 1974.
ABBA is one of the few artists who has actually like launched a giant international career out of Eurovision. Really still. So that was like 1974.
And this was like ABBA's second record, I think, about that time. I think they yes. they only had one album out before this.
I think the first album was 72. They tried that to get right. into they tried to get into Eurovision the year before. With the song Ring Ring.
Gotcha.
And Sweden was like, I don't know
about But Ring it. Ring was a mild hit in the UK.
Oh, it was.
Waterloo, though, that broke them everywhere. I mean, it hit number six in the US even, just from them being in Eurovision. This was their true international breakthrough. Yeah. And you can tell, like, watching their live performance of
it's
it.
My favorite
the
thing.
Audience is just mesmerized by what they're seeing. I think that they, I don't know, ABBA just really captivates, and it's quite something to watch.
The thing I love about that, like, they didn't like to perform live. ABBA was one of those, you know, they didn't like to tour, they didn't like to perform live. And this is, like, the first time, because fame was not great for them. Like, it kind of killed them, especially Agneta. It, like, she didn't like it. She was very shy.
No.
Very, and, like, you know, being famous in Sweden, she'd been famous in Sweden for a decade. But, you know, that's you're famous in Sweden. People leave you alone.
Right, it's
still
totally
a very
different.
Insulated thing. And this is usually I see her later on in her career and she's sullen and she's like, well, I'm here singing and it's whatever. And she's very inward. I love this because she's smiling and she's happy and she's having fun. And this is my favorite probably live performance of all ABBA time because everyone looks so happy and fun and kitschy. And I love it so much. It's perfect.
We're going to fast forward up to 1981. We're kind of going to talk through each of these sections chronologically.
This is probably my second favorite one of all time.
Yeah, your second favorite Eurovision of all time? Eurovision song? So introduce this
1981.
One.
1981. A little act from the UK called Bucks Fizz.
Bucks Fizz.
You know anything about Bucks Fizz?
I don't.
Oh my God. I love Bucks Fizz.
I never heard of
Bucks
them.
Fizz. I found Bucks Fizz a long time ago before I even knew they were Eurovision. Like, I just, like, happened across them, and I was like, this is dumb, and I love it. This is fun. A little song called Making Your Mind Up, mm-hmm. which was a huge hit, and they actually had a pretty huge career out of this, too. And, you know, like, I'm going to put this in. You remember, you know how people would be like, where were you when Kennedy was shot? Where were you? In Eurovision history, it was, where were you when they ripped Bucks Fizz's skirts off? In the like, that was a moment. That
really?
Yes. In that video, like, there's a little line. It's like, if you want to see some more. And they rip off the skirts. And it, like, became this huge thing. And people still reference it all the time. And it makes no sense. But this song is very fun.
Very interesting.
The choreography on stage is like an ode to white people booty shaking.
Yeah, it's like, this is like new wave high school musical.
I mean, that's Eurovision. It's always a little bit behind. That's the thing about Eurovision. It's always a little behind. Nothing is ever right on there. Usually if a trend becomes big in Eurovision, it was actually something in the real world that was big like 5-6 years ago. That's just the way Eurovision is. It always has been. yeah, but Bucks Fizz is fantastic. All right. So I was saving this. There was a moment that I came to love Eurovision the second that I was introduced to this. And we're going to go to 2006 when I was in Paris. And I had my friend who was from Norway who was visiting me at the time of Eurovision. And I didn't really know anything about it. I knew about ABBA because I was an ABBA fan. And I was like, what's Eurovision? Should we watch it? And then she was like, no one cares about Eurovision. It's dumb. It's the worst. And I was like, oh, okay. If it sucks, then I don't. Okay. And then she proceeded after that to name like 500 very specific opinions that let me know she knew exactly what was going on in Eurovision and maybe people actually did care. And I was like, Vivi, you're sending me mixed messages. So we ended up watching it. And I was like, the whole time I was like, okay, I don't know. Like Lost Ketchup was in it that year. And I was like, it's my girls. I love me some Lost Ketchup. And then here comes, from Finland, a little act called Lordi with their beautiful rendition of a song called Hard Rock Hallelujah. And it was...
So I'm going to set the scene for you. I actually had seen this clip before and had just forgotten about it. So imagine the band Gwar, because yeah. Finland is very famous for death metal. They love heavy metal music there. So this is a death metal group. They are dressed up like goblins, demons. I mean, just pounds and pounds of latex and makeup. And, you know, like they should have giant axes strapped on their back or something. And just with their guitars up there doing a kind of a popish heavy metal song,
like,
too.
Honestly, it's a very good pop song. They're just playing it loud and hard. And it's like, oh, that chorus, it's like...
Did this song win, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Like, which I was like completely dumbfounded because that was nothing I had ever thought of in the frame of... What Europeans like. Well, it's not Lordi.
But you know what? They found what's amazing about this song is that they managed to find this sweet spot where mass appeal heavy metal worked. Like, yes. It was a thing. They figured out a way to mass market a heavy metal song.
And I think
song,
it helped because that year of Eurovision, it took place in Greece that year. Like, it was so forgettable pop music. It was just bubblegum crap, that whole contest, and then you get Lordi and you're like, what the hell is this? Like, that was the moment when I was like, this is fantastic. Why does no one love this? This is great. And I've actually talked to a lot of people, like especially Americans who know anything about Eurovision and follow it. Lordi was their moment. I don't know if it's because it's about, you know, my age, but Lordi was the moment where they were like, holy shit. But of course, the problem with Lordi too is that because they won, a lot of people followed suit with that rock thing. And the contest kind of sucked balls for the next few years because it was just all of these terrible rock acts that weren't Lordi but were trying to be Lordi, and it wasn't good. But Lordi Hard Rock Hallelujah is just listen to it, watch the video because it's unbelievable. Blessings are tripled on this sinner's night. No star the lamps with no guiding light. The walls come down like thunder.
So we're up to 2014 now.
Yes. The last few years of Eurovision have been pretty dope, other than 2016.
But. Yes. And we're going to talk about a lady named Conchita Wurst.
Yeah.
She's a drag queen. This is her her drag persona is, yes, Conchita Wurst. I can't remember what her real name
Thomas
is.
Thomas Newman.
Thomas Newman, yes. Is his name. He's a performer. Yes. And Austrian, thank you. I can't remember the country. He performs as a drag character named Conchita Wurst. And yes, I love this—a fake character winning Eurovision,
like,
but for good reason. Conchita is a drag queen who performs with a full beard.
Yeah, it was the talk of all 2014. There was nothing else in that Eurovision contest but Conchita Wurst.
I mean, I like it because I'm here for anything that challenges gender roles or subverts gender in any way, and that's definitely what Conchita as a character is trying to do. The song is actually okay. I mean, it's not the greatest song, but it's this one is really more about the performance. And it's just, it's a heck of a performance. He's a very good singer. It's just not a very exciting song, but this one is definitely about the performance. And I think that she deserved the win big time.
And this is one of those important moments that you'll see, especially in modern Eurovisions, after the USSR fell and the Eastern Bloc came in. You know, you've got places that aren't as progressive as Western Europe, who don't love gay rights and who don't love things like Conchita Wurst. So it generates a lot of drama and a lot of weird little protests from certain countries who will not, you know, even acknowledge that Conchita Wurst is there. It's always these moments in Eurovision serve as a very important little cultural fight. Today, from the fading light of life, rise like a phoenix out of the ashes, seeking rather than vengeance, retribution. You were warned. Once I'm transformed. You're my flame. Now I'm going to talk about my future husband.
is this why this is on the iconic list?
No, it's iconic because I'll get to it. But okay. He is incredibly good looking and very charming and very Swedish. All things that I am very pro in this world. Måns Zelmerlöw from Sweden with Heroes. The song is fun. I like the song. But what was really good about this is that, like, you look at old Eurovision song contests, and it's all the song, and it's all maybe the dancing, and maybe you have a fun costume. But now you've got, in the modern world, you have this crazy stage design, and you have, you know, these little effects that are just as much as your performance as, say, the actual song and the way you sing it and what you're wearing. It's that whole thing. And that was like, this is the moment when you're like, okay, it's good song, good singer. But holy shit, look at these stage effects. How much did you have to rehearse this?
I'm glad that that is your prominent note also, because it was my only positive note about this song, because I think this song was really boring.
And it's not.
I think he's great value Enrique Iglesias, and I think that if you're doing a cheap Enrique Iglesias impersonation and you come out with a song fucking called Heroes, you really got a lot of nerve.
I mean, like, I'm about to flip your table. How dare you say that?
But the stage animations on this performance are amazing, and you should watch the performance. You can watch it on mute if you want, but the animations around him are really, really cool. I mean, it's just a really neatly done CG thing that there was a lot of choreography involved too.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, yeah, very cool.
We are the heroes of our time, heroes. Oh, oh, oh. But we're dancing with the demons in our minds, heroes. Oh, oh, oh. We are the heroes of our time, heroes. Oh, oh, oh. But we're dancing with the demons in our minds, heroes. Oh, oh, oh.
Now we're going to go into the category that I have named in the notes, what the actual fuck.
Yes.
Yeah.
What the fuck, Eurovision? What the fuck?
And there were a lot of those moments.
Yes. So we're going to go back to when Germany was West Germany and East Germany, 1979,
the height of the disco era. And hoo boy, did that provide some interesting Eurovision fodder. So set this up. The Germans love them some fucking disco. And 1978 was a great year for a little act called Boney M. You know, they're pretty good. They are one of my favorites. And they had a big hit called Rasputin.
Yes.
Which is...
Rah-rah Rasputin.
Russia's greatest love machine. So it's something, right. You know, this is they're talking about Rasputin, of all things you could say about him, about, you know, how he, you know, fucked a lot of women. So whatever. So you get... Germany's like, I got an idea for Eurovision. How about we do some more historical disco about kind of shitty people in history?
That's really the background of this song. They were just like, hey,
yeah,
we should pick another
Boney M.
We should rather wow.
So they're like, who should we get that we can talk about how awesome his sexual prowess is? Oh, Genghis Khan. Let's make a sexy disco song about Genghis Khan. So you get Chinggis Khan.
Yes.
With
well,
the song.
But the German people just pronounce it Genghis Khan, but
know,
this
but
is spelled DSCHINGHIS.
Yes.
Which, of course, is not at all how Genghis Khan would have spelled his name had he anglicized it. But, these are the Germans, so what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
It starts off with this really cute animation that's introing it.
Yeah.
And there's this lovely, like, Rhodes electric piano motif going on this animation that I was just totally in love with.
That's actually a tradition of Eurovision. It's not part of the performance. Like, whoever is hosting it or whatever TV show, they provide little, like, intros to the country.
Right. And I noticed that on one of the other, I think I noted that on one of the other clips, too, where they said this is what the director's vision of that song was.
Yes.
So I guess the people televising this kind of get to decide
they do a little
what the
video.
Song makes them think of, and they come up with these little intros.
Yeah, it depends on the country, depends on the interesting. Year. But
Yeah, the intro to this one is very cute. Much better than the actual song.
Oh, my God. This song is terrible, and it's like no talk about, like, you know, genocide, none of that. It's just like he fathered like 7 chicks in a night, and it's just ridiculous and tone deaf. And even Europe in 1979, who was kind of into this stuff, was like, no, dog.
Yeah, right.
It's a lot.
I did crack up when the announcer said that the members of the group wrote the song and then assembled professional singers to sing it. Because you can kind of tell the people on the stage. I feel like halfway through the performance, the singers on the stage are going, they kind of reality sets in to them, and it's like the drugs wear off, and they're just like, oh, what am I doing?
Yeah,
I'm singing a song about a genocidal maniac.
That man you're talking about is a Eurovision legend, Terry Wogan, who for 30 years, pretty much a little over 30 years, announced and did the commentary for BBC. So he became just this guy who made fun of everything the whole time it was on there. He never took anything seriously. He was like, oh, here we go. And he became like the Eurovision legend. He was one of the people 2016 took. But he is like this UK legend for basically just making fun of Eurovision. And if you're ever watching Eurovision stuff on YouTube, make sure to get the BBC version, because Terry Wogan is more of a show than the actual Eurovision. He's worth every second. Ireland, who is actually the most winning country of Eurovision, but I don't think they've won it in 25 years. Like, they won it like 3 years in a row in the 90s. Like, they're crazy. But they hadn't won in a while, so Ireland was like, I've got an idea. We've got this really cool children's puppet performer called Dustin the Turkey. And we're going to have him sing this stupid song about Eurovision, saying, sorry, what went wrong? Please vote for us. And they have the song Irland 12 points.
I'll offer the qualification here that Eurovision is scored in both English and French.
Yes.
12 points in French means 12 points. Mm-hmm. 12 points is a high score in Eurovision. Yeah. So, yes, the song is encouraging the judges to please assign Ireland 12 points.
It's, like, ridiculous. They actually reference Terry Wogan in the song.
They have this person in this ridiculous mascot costume on stage behind DJ turntables as Dustin the Turkey. They didn't even spring for, like, a good mascot costume either. I mean, it's really, really cheap and bad looking. And the song is horrible.
It's terrible. It didn't make it out of the semifinal. Surprise. I feel like it's one of only those things that seems like a good idea if you're in Ireland and you know who Dustin the Turkey is and you know that show.
Right, but the rest of Europe is going, what the hell is this?
Yeah, including me. I was like, are you even trying? Like, pick literally any person that is a human. It was the worst.
I want to set the stage for this one properly. So this is 2012. This is Russia's entry into the Eurovision Song Contest. I'm not going to try to pronounce the group's name because I can't. But the song is called Party for Everybody. I want you to imagine a Matryoshka doll, but like completely disassembled into its various small to large dolls. And they're all 8,000 years old and doing a coordinated Euro dance together.
And baking bread.
And baking bread. That is what this song is.
Warning, this song is ridiculous, but it also, the chorus will get in your head. Party for everybody dance. Like, anytime it comes on, I'm like, it's in my head for like 4 hours and I feel really terrible. Yeah, it's just a bunch of grandmas singing this ridiculous thing and they're like barely singing into the microphone. You can't even hear them. It's ridiculous. But yeah, I don't know what Russia was doing there. I don't know if they were just fucking with people. I don't know if you can tell what Russia
is. It's something, man.
Man, it's a thing.
So we're going to get into a couple of political songs here.
And with a preface that political songs are not allowed in Eurovision. There's supposed to be no politics.
Gotcha.
Zero politics in Eurovision. That's the rule. Does that always get followed or happen that way? Absolutely not. Because we have some pretty political countries in here.
We do. So the first one of the two we're going to talk about happened in the year 2000. This was Israel.
Yes. This is an awful song.
You know, Israel, I mean, I don't know how you would invite Israel and or Palestine to any sort of event and not expect it to get political.
Yeah. I mean, they've been pretty good. They're still in it. But this, in 2000, they picked a wonderfully named band called Ping Pong. To do a song called Samiak. I don't know. I'm not.
Samiak. Hebrew. Yeah. It's something Samiak, like that.
Which means be happy.
We don't speak Hebrew. Sorry.
Nope. Which means be happy. And it is a very happy song. It's poorly sung and poorly danced.
It's awful.
All of it is the year 2000 when you watch this performance. When you look at it, you're
it's,
like,
it's
shit.
It's peak 2000 awfulness. Yes. Yeah. So the song is bad, but that's beside the point.
Now, what happened with this, they picked the song to do whatever, and you know, Israel picked them and it was fine. Then they started performing the song around and they would bring Syrian flags onto the stage, and they were having a little conflict at the time, you know, crazy. So they brought Syrian flags up with the Israeli flags at the end of the thing to be like, peace, yay, be happy. And Israel was like, oh no, dog. But it was already too late for them to do that. So Israel like made this announcement, like, we disavow our Eurovision. Our Eurovision entry this year. So, like, whatever happens with them, we don't like it. So they get up there and they do the Syrian flag thing and they're like, peace! And Israel's like, this sucks. So, yeah, that was pretty controversial because Israel was pissed at their own Eurovision thing for promoting peace. So, but yeah, this is a bad song. This is one of my favorites. In 2009, the Georgian entry, which by the way ended up getting withdrawn right before 2009, Russia had finally won after years of being assholes. They finally managed to win. So the contest was being held in Moscow. The Russians and the Georgians were having a little armed conflict at the time. The Georgians were not a huge fan of Russia or a little guy named Vladimir Putin. So they come up with a song by Stefan and 3G. Their entry is going to be called a song. It's a song called We Don't Want to Put In. And I don't know if, like, if you just
very
think,
subtle.
Yeah, I mean, you can't see it right here, but, like, put in. Like, if you put those words together, we don't want to put in. Moscow did not like it. I think this is the one where the foreign minister got involved and was like, no. And they were like, you have to pick a different song. And Eurovision's like, all right, Georgia, pick a different song. And Georgia's like, actually, go to hell. We're good. We're not doing this year. And so it became even bigger than probably it would have been had they just put that song in, because everyone was like, ooh, Russia sucks. But yeah, it was actually kind of a good song. It's a pretty good little funky song. But yeah, Russia was not pleased. It's one of many Russia dramatic moments of Eurovision political past. To drag it down to the knees. But let me tell you, don't worry. No worries. No worries. Another glass of the moonshine will kick the hell out of me. But let me focus on good stuff. Some good stuff. Just good stuff. We don't wanna put in the negative move. It's killing the groove.
So now we're going to talk about just a few that are just some of our random favorites throughout the Eurovision contest.
They maybe didn't win. They maybe didn't do very well, but these are just fun songs that should have done well. 1980, one of my favorite little acts in general, which for a long time I didn't even know was in Eurovision, Telex from Belgium. They did a little song called Eurovision. Do you know anything about Telex?
Yes.
Telex is fantastic.
First of all, pronounce it correctly. Eurovision.
Eurovision. Yeah, they were very heavily...
very, very Belgian. They bring out this huge analog synth on stage with them, like with the oscillators and LFO, you know, all the knobs and everything, all the envelope generator, all these controls on stage and this big fat analog synth. Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like so new wave. And they look like a group of college professors.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. No,
by the way. Mm-hmm. And they also do one of my favorite early 80s European tropes where they sing with their hands in their pockets.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
Like a super, like, I'm super European and it's the early 80s, so I'm going to perform on TV. Do you know what the name of this album was, by the way, when they eventually dropped an album and put this song on it?
I don't, was this on the Saint-Tropez album?
No.
No, I don't remember what this next one was.
So, of course, if you're a science geek and everything you do has to reference science, but you do Eurovision, what else would you name?
Oh, is it Neurovision?
What else would you name your album but Neurovision?
Yeah, they have an album before this, Looking for Saint-Tropez, which is fantastic. I love Telex. They were super influenced by that whole Kraftwerk thing.
Yes.
And they were trying to, like,
but
get
more
out
accessibly.
There. Oh, yeah.
They, I mean, they wrote pop. They wrote, like, European pop music.
Oh, it's pop. Yeah, but their manager
was,
like...
But kind of with the synthesizer sensibilities.
Yeah. And they were way too cool for Eurovision, and they knew they were way too cool for Eurovision. Their manager was like, do you want to be in Eurovision? And they were like, seriously? And so they wrote this song... With, like, they just kind of wanted to, like, scare people a little bit and be like, we want to be completely different. And their goal was to come in last, but they came in next to last because Portugal gave them 12 points. Portugal was like, we are into this. And so they were, like, upset because they didn't get last.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's so good. It is in 1982, and I think this is interesting because this song just started recharting on the UK charts. It's a United Kingdom song from 1982. Mm-hmm. Bardo, One Step Further, because apparently there's some comedian show on the in the UK on BBC somewhere, I guess, that used this song in the background of something, and everyone was like, holy shit, what's that song? And they all started re-downloading it, so now it's like in the top 20 somehow again. Bardo, One Step Further. I love this song.
Questionable lyrical content.
That's Eurovision. Come on.
Turn around and hit me and I wouldn't have cared.
I know it's not great, but, you know, it's also Eurovision where sometimes the lyrics just don't make any sense. But God, it's such a good little pop song. I love it. I just want you to prefer me to the other guy. I walked up beside you, but I forgot all the things that. This is probably my number three.
Yeah, this is a very time. You song. It's another Swedish song from 1984.
Yes.
Harry's, is that
Harry's?
Harry's. Harry's.
Diggaloo, diggalay, a good nonsense thing. Nonsense lyrics go over very well in the last 60 years of Eurovision. A lot of ding-a-ling-a-lings and...
Well, yeah, sure, it breaks through language barriers. That makes sense.
Diggaloo, diggalay is actually in Swedish. They do have an English version if you get on Spotify on their album called Diggaloo, diggalay. It's actually a really good album. Not that I listen to it a lot, but it's a very good album. Yeah, it's like they were first in 1984, the first ones to go out there. And Terry Wogan, who hardly makes like rash statements, like says, oh my God, the Swedish act this year is like the worst one that's ever happened on Eurovision. Of course, everyone hears that and they're like, bing, I'm listening. So Harry's ends up winning and called them the singing deodorants.
Oh my gosh.
Which is very true. There are three Mormon Swedish brothers who came from New York. They were here on their Mormon trip, the little Mormon mission thing. They had to fly back from New York to be in Eurovision. Diggaloo Diggalay is a classic, and it's so fun. Now this one is one that you added on there.
Yeah, this was kind of my big pick for this episode. I love this song ever since I heard it in French class in high school, and it's just stuck with me ever since. It's from the 1990 Eurovision contest by a lady named Joëlle Ursel, and it's called White and Black Blues.
It's very
As you know, in the early 90s, with everything that was happening in South Africa, and you know the USSR was starting to split. Racial harmony was a very big theme everywhere. In pop culture everywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And this, I guess Eurovision was no different. This is just a nice little song sung by a black woman of, I believe she has, I think she...
Somewhere in the West Indies.
Yeah, it's a West Indies descent, but was a French-speaking French citizen lady, wrote this just really nice song called White and Black Blues.
Yeah, the original title was, I believe, Black Lolita. Serge Gainsbourg wrote it, and he was like, here's a song I wrote. And she was like, can we not with the Black Lolita? This is not great. Like, this is not great, Serge. So he rewrote it as White and Black Blues.
Yeah, and it does not sound like contemporary pop. It came out in 1990.
France is very good at doing that.
Yeah, it kind of, it sounds very French. Uh-huh. It sounds very Serge Gainsbourg. It's got his fingerprints all over it. Yep. But it's a very cute little song, and it's always stuck with me, and I love it. White and Black. Oh, and now we're to my absolute favorite.
Oh my God. For years, I didn't know until probably a few years ago that this was even a Eurovision song. But my God, this song is great. 1996's Gina's G's. Ooh, ah, just a little bit. Ooh, ah,
little bit more. Ooh, ah.
Oh, so they get it's an Australian. Gina G's Australian. The UK gets her to perform. She didn't even win. I think she got second. But
this might be the greatest synth motif in, like, definitely in the 90s, but possibly in all of, like, house music ever. Like,
I never
this,
get sick of
this
it.
Synth riff, you know this riff. Everybody knows this riff. It's a classic.
Yeah, one of those few really international hit songs.
Yes.
From Eurovision.
When I was a little kid, when this came out, I would often stay up really, really, really late on Saturday night watching VH1, as I did. And they ran a program at like 3:30 or 4 in the morning where they only played club videos, dance club videos.
Oh, yeah.
And they would always play this video every single episode. It was just a huge dance hit at the time. And it did cross over to pop radio. Like, I remember it being on contemporary hit radio in the United States.
Yeah, that's how I would have heard it. heard it. Yeah.
For sure. I mean, I was very well aware of this song. In fact, I for whatever reason, I have this bizarre memory burn of seeing her CD at the end of the rack, like in Target or something. Like, I definitely remember, like, the Ooh Ah Just a Little Bit single being there. But yeah, this was a huge song and it, with Eurovision roots. And
I mean,
after, one that I definitely still love.
Yeah, I mean, we had gotten everyone, you know, we had gotten into years where no one was really getting famous from Eurovision, you know, in the early 90s or so. So everyone was like, Eurovision's pointless. You're not going to get any, you know, traction out of Eurovision. Gina G changed that. Because that song was so huge all over the world, even here in the U.S. So, like, that for example, was actually what prompted Katrina and the Waves to get in. Because they're like, oh, we're going to become huge stars because Gina G did it wrong. But, yeah, it prompted that again. So now we're going to get into this year's Eurovision, which, by the way, the songs this year are probably the best group of songs I've heard in a Eurovision, maybe ever.
Like, wow.
There aren't really that many stinkers. It'll be interesting to see on stage in the live show how they make them stinkers. But, you know, when you listen to them, they're not really that uncool. So it's going to be interesting. Russia's not in it this year, which kills everyone's drinking game. Because Russia is very easy for a drinking game because they're so dramatic. Of course, the contest is being staged in Kiev, in the Ukraine. Ukraine and Russia have a little bit of a tiff right now over Crimea. Ukraine basically barred Russia's pick from coming in this year because she performed a concert in Crimea 2 years ago. And because Ukraine's like, Crimea is ours, and Russia's like, Crimea is ours, she didn't have the proper Ukrainian visa. So they're like, wow, she entered our country illegally. She can't come in now. And Russia got really mad and was like, well, we're not even going in. And Eurovision's like, hey, Ukraine, let's all be one and together and let her in. And Ukraine's like, no, we're good. Bye, Russia. So Russia's really mad right now. They're not even showing the contest this year. So who knows what's going to happen in the future of Russia thing, you know, but I'm sure they'll be over it next year and they'll be back to their old ways. Take that as you will.
So we're going to touch on a couple of songs though, yes, from this year that we like. The clear favorite, as you said, is Italy's entry.
Yes. Francesco Gabbani's Occidentali's
Karma.
Occidentali's Karma.
Right. And Occidentali, by the way, I had to look this up, means Western. A Westerner.
Yeah.
So yes.
It's a song about, it's
like, this is like if Maroon 5 was fronted by Robin Thicke and they were all doing dusters. That is what Francesco Gabbani is.
Yeah, I get that.
What the hell's going on. They're doing all this stuff of Eastern culture and they're talking about Westerns. It all just seems very rude and inappropriate.
It's a song about, like, Western culture is ruining Eastern culture. Like, Eastern culture is so fucking pure and great, you know. Like,
I don't know. It's
exhausting.
It's
there's a dancing gorilla that will be on stage with him. It's very Eurovision. I don't get it, but apparently everyone else loves it to death.
The Sweden entry, Robin Bengtsson. You were not the only person who sent me this song. It's a nice little pop tune.
Everyone loves the song. It's the best. I'm wearing my fan shirt for him today as we record. I will be for him. There will be treadmills. Everyone loves a treadmill. When I first listened to the songs for this year's Eurovision, there was one of this where I was like, what the hell is this? And it's called Yodel It by Elinza and Alex Floria, the Romanian entry. And there is yodeling, like, and there's rapping, and there's, I don't understand it. And the more I listen to it, the more I think, I'm like, shit, that might win. Like, it's
I'm not into this. It's the most played out chord progression in the history of music and the worst hair in Eurovision history also.
Wow, I don't know about that. Like, there's a lot of bad hair.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, I don't know. Watch out for it, though. My dark horse is Portugal. Salvador Sobral, Amor Pelos Dois, or whatever you say. It is a very beautiful little song that doesn't sound like anything else in the competition. It's like old standard kind of
also singing. He's really, really hot, and that helps.
Oh, you have a thing for old Salvador.
He's super cute. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, he's adorable.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a little man bun, which I am 100% pro in all things. You should also check out the Spanish entry to Manuel Navarro, Do It For Your Lover. He's a cutie. He's like 18 or something.
So, but your pick to win is the Italy song.
I mean, I don't know. My pick to win, I'm cheering for Sweden. I think that they could make it. I think they could do it. It just depends on what happens with Italy. But I think Italy is probably going to win. But you never know. Sometimes it's very hard to predict. That's the thing about Eurovision. So you all should definitely watch on Saturday. And if you would like, just... Yes. Talk to me because I will be at home alone. Like,
yeah, tweet Danielle. She'll be all over Twitter that day.
Oh my god!
Yeah. Thank you for bearing with our kind of long episode this week.
Yeah, I know,
because this was Eurovision's obviously a lot to cover. There are 50 whatever years of it, but I think we gave a pretty fair pass.
We can do it next year. And we won't have as much to talk about.
Well, see, there you go.
Dude, we've gotten all the history out.
Right.
Anyway, thanks for bearing with me and letting me talk about Eurovision, which is all I want to do.
Nice little crash course in Eurovision history.
Yes, yes, definitely.
Catch us on our website. It's offbeattrackscast.com.
Yes, and also our Twitter is @offbeattracks.
Yes, and we'll be back next week to more of our usual wheelhouse and talking about another Canadian.
Yeah, so, why not?
Until then, I'm Max.
I'm Danielle.
See you.